Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the 343 podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. I've got three things for you today. Number one is the Luis Suarez incident, where he spit on a Seattle Sounders sort of like assistant or something to that effect. Obviously, that happened last week after the League's Cup final, but Benny brought it to my attention. He wanted me to comment on it, and there's a lot of lessons to be learned here. This is not a situation where it's like just an open and shut case. Human A spit on human B, punish human A, end of story. Let's dig a little bit deeper. Let's learn some things way beyond the superficial that you only get in the mainstream, which is why 343 exists, so that we can do exactly that. Peel the layers of the onion back. We all know that culture is a huge component to football and to anything, really. So let's try to understand culture, shall we? The second thing we're going to talk about is more of a practical matter. I received an email surrounding a coach who is trying to pick players based off of two trials, two 90-minute trials. So we're going to be talking about tryouts and trials and what a coach should and shouldn't really be doing. We offer a lot of insight with respect to what we've personally experienced going through trials and tryouts and who we pick and how we go about doing those things. And Benny, of course, offers amazing insight as well with respect to what activities you should be running in these tryouts to help filter and help decipher player A from player B. Last but certainly not least, yes, promotion and relegation. And just like every time we talk about promotion and relegation, there's another viewpoint, another angle that is blasted out there into cyberspace. We do the same thing here. Benny really gets me going on this one, so you don't want to miss out on that. All right, everybody, I've said it a million times. I'm going to keep saying it because we always are growing and having new audience members join at random points during the podcast cycle. We do not accept sponsors here. We sponsor ourselves. We produce this show all on our own dime. And the way that we do that is we offer products and services of our own. They are products and services for coaches and for parents, both separate things. For coaches, you go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium coaching education programs for you there based on not some random external stuff, but based on our decades worth of work in the American soccer ecosystem and international experience as well, from the ages of 9 up through U19, and including almost a decade's worth of work operating at the professional level with professional players and teams and clubs. So there's a whole bunch of information for you there. You get to actually witness a top-class practitioner executing with his teams. That would, of course, be Brian Kleiben, my brother. So you go to 343coaching.com and get signed up right away. We're entering the fall season here in the United States. Don't start off doing random stuff or things that you maybe picked up randomly online or things maybe that you've been doing for 5 or 10 years. And you kind of know that it's not working, or it's not working as much as it should be. We've got the solution for you, 343coaching.com. And parents, we've got solutions for you too. We've codified everything from an angle where parents are the ones who are the mentors and parents are the ones who are coaching their kids, not necessarily on the field, but off the field also. And for that, you go to 343masterclass.com. So parents, get your butts over to 343masterclass.com, sign up, and guide and mentor your kid a lot better. Last but certainly not least, 7 versus 7, folks. You go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, as usual, there's a lot of gold nuggets in this one. I hope you enjoy it. Here we go. Good, man. Everything okay?
Yeah, everything good, dude. Actually, the baby sleeps pretty good. He has like 3 or 4 hours of uninterrupted sleep at night, so that's kind of nice. I hear horror stories of babies waking up like every 45 minutes and just won't go to sleep, but I don't know. I'm sure it's coming. You get like this newfound energy, bro. I don't know where it comes from, but somehow you just have to do it, dude.
Well, yeah, you can't be a lazy bum in bed forever.
It goes by fast, brother. He's already 3 weeks old today.
Wild.
A lot to talk about today. I didn't know what to choose because there's so much to choose from, but I think today we'll talk about League Cup final. We'll address a member question and then a couple comments on YouTube that came up that wanted to pick your brain about. So to start, who cares about the game, Gary? Fuck it. Seattle won, but let's talk about post game. You and I briefly chatted the last time that we met up about the outrage of Suarez and Busquets and before we hopped on right now, I'm just looking on X and seeing what everybody's posting, and everybody's crying outrage. People are commenting, you know, Suarez should be sued. He needs to be banned from the league, should never be allowed to play football again. So I want to get your take on just the whole incident.
Let me start with our quote unquote locker room talk that you and I had about this incident a couple of days back. And, you know, I basically said, hey, what if Suarez identifies as a spitter naturally? That's just who he is. That's how he was brought up in the streets of Uruguay, in the favelas of Uruguay. And this is just in his nature. And why aren't we defending him for being naturally, that's who he identifies as, a spitter. And he also identifies as somebody who bites people. You know, he got a lot of backlash back then. He was able to kind of control that maybe. I'm sure he's had a lot of urges to bite others, just like Mike Tyson maybe at one point. And he's held back. But the spitting thing just came out. And why aren't we outraged at the people who are outraged at him? Like, we should be protecting him. So anyway, I'm only half joking. I'm literally only half joking because there are things that people are doing that are atrocious and vile and really affecting others in a permanent way. And we're not outraged at that. No, we need to protect these people who are committing these crimes and committing these violations and violating these social norms. No, they should be a protected class. Okay, look. You have an opportunity here, folks. Protect Suarez. Go out there and protect what he's doing. By the way, Benny, who is he hurting? I know I'm going to get massive hatred for this and backlash because this is so far afield from what is norm or normal. But so is all the other shit that you people have been doing is so far left field, nut job sort of stuff. And that's okay, right? But who is he hurting, Benny? Hey, do I condone spitting? Absolutely not. If I had a team full of players and they spit, absolutely not. You're fucking definitely punished for sure, because that's my set of values. That's my culture. I won't tolerate it on my teams. I won't tolerate it with people who are associated with me. But the outrage is more virtue signaling than anything else. How is this hurting you? You know, when they talk about stuff like preserving privacy and things of that nature, they're like, oh, well, Gary, we should let the government take a look at all of your transactions, and no, you shouldn't be able to keep secrets. They should be able to get into your WhatsApp messages or your private messages and these sorts of things, because it's for all of our own safety for the government to be able to do that. Why don't you want them to do that, Gary? What do you have to hide? You know, it has nothing to do with what I have to hide. That policy is affecting all of us, right? Where all our privacy is being violated. So how does this relate back to the Suarez thing? It relates back to the Suarez thing because how is him spitting on an assistant or whoever, I don't even know who that was, how is that affecting you who live in Lincoln, Nebraska? How is that affecting you who live in Tallahassee? How is that affecting you who live in San Diego? How is that affecting anybody? Oh, well, he should be a role model, Gary. Kids are watching. Kids shouldn't be. Okay, but what about all the fucking lunacy that exists in our world? And you guys accept all the lunatics out there doing orders of magnitude worse things than Suarez spitting on somebody. And you guys are like, cool. That's cool. No problem. Oh, my kids can watch that. No problem. And I think you all know kind of what I'm hinting at. I don't go so far as to say it because you get it. You get what I'm saying. So that's my perspective, Benny. I saw it. I saw the fight after. I'm like, okay, a lot of fire there. A lot of tempers flaring. We're animals. We're humans. We all express in a different way. Some people here want us to all be robots and not express any sort of passion. Are there lines that should not be crossed? I think that's true. There should be lines that shouldn't be crossed. Is this one of them? You know, where people are saying, oh, he should be banned from football altogether. He's done. God, just shut the fuck up, man. Shut up. And by the way, you don't know what people were doing to the Miami players. You don't know if that assistant coach or whoever the fuck that was went up to a Suarez and whispered in his ear or whatever and said, I fucked your mom or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have no idea what's transpired there. None.
Yeah, Gary, when you talk about like you mentioned all the atrocities that that people are doing, and people are doing things way worse. Are you talking about like in the soccer world? Are you talking about just
general
humans in general? In general,
general going to war, doing genocides, the fucking all this shit about men and women's sports, fucking men and women's bathrooms. Like, I don't want to go down that whole rabbit hole where I know it's very triggering, it's very heated topic, but fuck it. You know what I'm saying? This is the reality, and you guys all accept all kinds of fucking disgusting behavior and atrocities, and even root it on. You root it on. And here is an pro athlete who, in a very heated moment, yes, and he has a history, which we all know, okay? In a very heated moment, did this act, and this act is not as vile as all the other shit that all these people who are virtue signaling support.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. My thoughts are similar to yours in the sense that, again, I don't condone spitting on somebody, but again, and I would never spit on somebody, but that's not the culture that I was raised in. I mean, the culture that Suarez comes from is completely different, and he didn't do it for no reason, Gary. I mean, he didn't just go up to it, and the guy that he did it to was the head of Sounder Security, but you know that something was said to him or something about his wife or his kid, something, bro. Like, he's not just going to go up to the guy after the game and spit on him for no reason. So for sure it was instigated. And the point that I brought up to you is, think about Zidane in the World Cup final when he headbutted the Italian player, right? Was it spitting? No, but okay, it was a headbutt. It was in the game, red card out of the game. But the reaction by the public to that incident was, oh, I respect Zidane. The Italian player said something about his sister, so good on him for defending his family. Like, just the narrative was completely different from this situation. And that's a World Cup final, bro. You know?
Yeah.
Think about if Suarez bit somebody in a World Cup final and he goes out red card. I mean, again, the outcry would be insane, dude. You know what
World
I mean?
Cup, yeah, World Cup final with billions, with a B, people tuning in. From kids from all over the world, you know, from point, I mean, everybody was watching that. Everybody witnessed it and nobody had this outrage. Well, I take that back. I bet you, and not because I don't recall, I bet you a lot of these Americans here, like, oh my God, Zidane, headbutting, violence. Man, come on, dude. Right? It's the continued putzification of America, dude. That's what it is. Yeah. And by the way, if this head of security guy or whatever did instigate retaliation in one way or another, we don't know that, but I don't see anybody asking those questions. I don't see anybody online asking, hey, what caused this? You know, did the security guy do something? Because Suarez is not going to go up to some random guy that happens to be there and do something to a random guy.
Yeah.
Why was it this guy? And if he did do something to instigate it, everybody who's virtue signaling now should be saying, hey, that guy was inciting violence, incitement. He's the one who should be in trouble.
No, Gray. And the fact that this guy is like, you know, I don't know, 60 years old. So people are saying like, oh, Suarez is spitting on a senior citizen, bro. Just doing anything they can to make this guy look like the devil, basically, you know, so. Tim Howard and Donovan come out on their podcast. Tim Howard says, how has this guy not had his nose rearranged? Not to condone fighting, but if I bit two people, spat on someone, and have a racial incident, I'd expect at some point someone's going to go, you know what? Let me take care of this guy. That's what I expect. The fact that he's still doing these things is crazy. MLS, stand up. I'm putting the onus on you, MLS. This was too far. It's a joke. You don't spit on anybody. If you do, there are repercussions.
Okay, so for Howard, it's okay to assault someone. That's literally what he's saying. He's saying, hey, guy bit two people, spit on somebody. You know, he should be assaulted. No, he's literally saying that. He's literally kind of saying,
he is, yeah.
If he came up and did that to me, Tim Howard, he'd be, you know, I'd rearrange his face. That's what he's saying. So he is cool with violence.
Yeah. No, I like how he says it. And the start of his call, he says, not to condone fighting, but.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? You know what they say, Benny? Everything before a but, the word but, you can throw it in the trash.
Yeah, exactly. Now he further goes on to say, if I were walking down the street, I'd rather you smack me than spit on me. Because if you smack me, I'm going to laugh and go, all right, this is on now. But if you spit on me, I'm going to go into a blind rage. You just don't do that to another human being. Thing about Suarez is he's protected. He's not walking down the street of New York spitting on somebody because the repercussions would be outrageous. He knows that he's protected by security and 22 other players, so he gets off scot-free. But hopefully MLS handles this themselves.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll have to see how MLS handles this.
Crazy,
bro. It'll be telling either way, no matter how MLS handles this. It'll be telling.
Yeah. And again, to be clear, Gary, because I can already see the comments going on this one. Like, you don't condone spitting on people.
Of course not. I literally just said, hey, if any of my players were to do that, like, that's not completely unacceptable. Unacceptable. Or anybody in my organization, if I had a club or ran a club or something, like, completely unacceptable, of course. Right. However, all the other things I said are also, should be deeply considered. The hypocrisy should be deeply considered. The hypocrisy of the people outraged and virtue signaling. Somebody who is in Montana, Benny, is commenting, oh my God, he should be banned for life. Some dude in Montana, like, what the fuck do you care? What is the reason for you to go online and do that?
Well, I don't know. Do they want to feel important or something, dude?
Yeah, you want to feel important. That's there's a whole mob of virtue signalers. It's the easiest and safest way to think that you actually matter, because you actually haven't built shit in your life. You haven't actually accomplished dick in your life. So you're on the computer and you're out there, they should destroy Suarez, because Suarez actually has built and has become somebody in their life. So this is a nice opportunity for the mob to pile on somebody successful and destroy them. Forget the spitting thing, because it doesn't have to be spitting. It could be somebody who doesn't spit or doesn't do any of these sorts of vile actions. And the same behavior applies with the mob. Anybody who's successful, if they trip up or do something a little bit outside the norms or whatever, heaven forbid, very outside the norms, the mob comes.
Now, Gary, even before the spitting, when you think back to the World Cup and Suarez saves a ball at the last second with his hand and gets a red card. The same outcry, bro. Like, I just read a comment on X right now, like, oh, this guy robbed an entire country of the World Cup. And it's like, bro, this guy's playing the game. He's doing what he can to win no matter what. And you still want to attack him and vilify him because he's competitive, because he wants to give his country a chance. Like, the same narratives were being spit out. And that wasn't spitting. That wasn't biting. That was him playing the game. So...
By the way, and from a cultural front, if we want to try to understand things, okay, if you're dirt poor in Uruguay, in the favelas of Brazil, in the slums of Argentina or something like that, Howard has a point in that spitting is worse than throwing a punch or fighting or something like that. Because, and the slums know it, the people, the kids who grew up there on the streets, barefoot in the dirt roads and all this stuff, they know that the act of spitting is more insulting to the person receiving it, right? Than if you go up and punch them or throw it down, right? With a fight. So that is the reason that they go the spitting route, because it is the ultimate insult. Again, I'm not condoning it. Let's try to explain it at least a little bit. Why do these things happen? And let's also try to explain why the reaction to these things is the way it is.
Yeah. Well, Gary, if you're Mascherano or you're Beckham, you know, what do you do?
It's a good question. I would wash my hands of it. I'm being honest. I'm being very honest here. You know, I'm the least diplomatic guy, if you can't tell by my responses so far, 15 minutes in, okay? I would say, or just hang back. There's two techniques, right? One is let the public, let the virtue signalers, the outrage kind of blow over, right? It's kind of like we have a 24-hour rule. Like, you as coaches, when a parent gets upset because the kid didn't play a lot or didn't play or whatever the heck it is, and they want to come talk to you after the game immediately, like, we always deploy the 24-hour rule. Hey, and we tell everybody up front, if you have an issue, don't come talk to us immediately when the thing happens. give it 24 hours, and then you come. That's normal tactics, right? Because then the emotions have gone dry. You can think about things more objectively, and then you can act a little bit more objectively. So the same thing there. If I was Beckham or Mascherano, I'm not engaging with interviews or public discourse or saying what we're going to do or not going to do. Nah, I kind of try to wash my hands of it. First off, I let the public chill out. I wash my hands of it, and it's a league decision. It's a league decision, ultimately. And here is another example of, it's not a strong example, but it's something to consider because it's not a direct, there are exceptions, obviously, of how these things are not clubs. These aren't clubs. The league is going to decide, right? It's not Inter Miami that is going to decide what to do with Suarez.
Yeah,
the league owns Suarez's contract. The players, every single player in MLS does not have a contract with the team or the franchise. They are not the team or franchise employees. They are employees of MLS.
Right.
So MLS is going to decide. So again, if I'm Beckham or Mascherano, I wash my hands of it. Whatever the league says, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah. And Gary, like, think about this scenario. Okay. Let's say a Man City player is playing in Champions League and he spits on a player after the game, right? Is the Premier League going to go and ban that player from Premier League games? No, I don't think so, right? It's going to be on, maybe Champions League will, or maybe Man City will, but it's not going to be the Premier League saying, hey, you're banned for 5 games or 10 games. And that's what people are calling for, dude. I mean, that's what Tim Howard said. It's like, MLS, you need to take initiative. You need to make something happen here. But I don't think overseas that would happen, right?
Overseas, you have obligations to both the club and you have obligations to the league or the competition that you're in. It might not be a direct contract with the league, but the club has obligations to the league, contractually speaking, right? And as part of your contract, you have, you know, codes of conduct sort of thing, right? And the codes of conduct obviously have a lot of explicit things and a lot of gray areas where then the club can make determinations. And look, let's be realistic. The league could come down to the club and pressure them and say, hey, you need to do X, Y, or Z. And the club, it's a negotiation that at that point or something like that. But the clubs have a lot more say overseas. If it's Man City could permanently end the player and decide for themselves how they're going to sanction the player and decide for themselves how they're going to fine the player and all these sorts of things. That's not really how it works here. The player doesn't work for the club.
Yeah.
Because it's not a club. Sorry.
Any predictions, Gary, on what you think MLS will do?
Well, they already have been floating feelers out there, not the league, but their minions. And it's not like the minions are directed explicitly by the league. It's just natural incentives, right? They're already floating the idea of like, well, it was League's Cup. It wasn't MLS, the MLS competition itself. It was League's Cup. And it wasn't, you know, CONCACAF Champions League or any other, or US Open Cup. So every competition is its own thing, right? They're trying to make it sound like. So if he gets a suspension or ban, you could make an argument at least like, oh, well, you know, next year's League's Cup, he can't play, you know, 7 games or he's banned from League's Cup or something like that. Obviously, they're not going to go that route, but throwing that sort of balloon out there, that feeler out there, already tempers people's expectations a bit. You know, to the point where people aren't thinking, oh, they should get rid of him permanently. He should retire, severance of contract. So right. What are they going to do? I don't know. There's been other instances where I think there may have been another spitting incident. I don't even remember anymore. I've only read headlines, but there's other things like Dempsey, you know, grabbing a ref's red card, you know, when he was playing for the Sounders, he grabbed the ref's red card and tore up the red card and threw it in his face or something like that. And he got like 3 games. Like they're trying to kind of throw these things out there so that maybe Suarez gets 3 or 4 games. I don't know. And by the way, it's not like Suarez massively impacts the sporting performance of Miami.
Right.
He's an old fucking fart. Yeah, does he score goals? Of course he scores goals, okay? But he's not that big a deal.
Yeah. Do you think the fact, Gary, that these guys are DPs coming in from, obviously coming from Barca, coming from the top European leagues, like, do you think if it was an American player that did this, that the the outcry and the outrage and the public perception would be the same? And would it be getting this much attention?
I think if it was an American player, he wouldn't be judged by the same standards, which is what you're kind of angling for. I think it would be different from a public perspective because let's say it's some nobody American. First off, would it make the news cycle? Of course, because it's rage bait in you know, the media nowadays, right? It gets clicks and stuff. So of course they'll bring it up. Of course they'll say all the same sorts of things. But it won't get as much traction as Luis Suarez, obviously, right? Or if it was Busquets, or if it was Jordi Alba, or if it was Rodrigo de Paul. That obviously is going to blow up the media like this one is blowing up. From a punishment perspective, unfortunately, I think the no-name American homegrown or something like that, you might be fucked. You know, they'll make an example out of you because they don't give a shit about American homegrowns. They'll just destroy you. They'll be like, okay, you're banned from playing MLS. You're done. Contract severed. We severed ties with homeboy. We have a zero tolerance policy for these sorts of things, right? With all the slurs or that, you know, during COVID era and up to a couple of years ago, we have a zero tolerance policy for hate speech, you know? And meanwhile, the only thing the guy said is like, you're retarded. Oh, zero tolerance policy. He said the word retarded, canceled. But since it's Suarez, I think it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
And not to mention that the players have power if you're like a global superstar. And Suarez's head could be chopped off. I'm not saying it can't, but Suarez is Messi's buddy. So I don't think the league is going to cross a line where Messi now is like, start saying this is not acceptable. You know what I mean? So I think it's almost all kind of going to be felt out and it's all kind of going to be negotiated, you know, to see where the line is and let's not piss off Messi because this is one of his best friends and let's figure it out.
Yeah.
That's how they'll treat it.
For sure. No, it's sad that people care more about this type of stuff than actually the deeper problems that are going on. The fact that there's a monopoly in MLS, the fact that there's no promotion relegation. It's not a true competition, but somebody spits on somebody and you have the entire U.S. soccer fan base on X screaming for heads to roll, bro. So it's kind of sad, dude.
It's very sad, man. It's very sad. The state of the mainstream culture here, specifically the state of the mainstream American soccer culture here. It's a very specific demographic that MLS attracts, and it's this demographic, the virtue signaling demographic.
Okay, what's worse, Suarez spitting or MLS's monopoly?
Come on, let's be real. Look, I haven't tuned into Uruguayan media. I'm sure something has come out in Uruguay or in South America in general. Nobody down there is launching a virtue signaling parade over this. Nobody.
Yeah, for sure, dude. No, they're probably supporting Suarez.
But oh, Gary, it's because South Americans are dirty, low-class humans, you know, vile, you know, lesser than us humans. They're not civilized like we are. Again, more virtue signaling.
Yeah. We could delete this part if you didn't end up listening, but did you listen to the thing that I sent you yesterday about Tim Howard kind of catching himself? He was about to say, you know, how important it is for the MLS, for the national team to have a good performance in the next two friendlies. And he catches himself and he says U.S. soccer.
Right.
You heard it?
I heard it. I don't think there's much there to create a whole content piece out of, but
yeah,
this is always in the back of people's brains, like Tim Howard and others. They all know that MLS is the monopoly and MLS controls U.S. soccer, and everything that happens with U.S. soccer, the national team, is all basically MLS driven. They know, and they know that they're not supposed to divulge that information.
Yeah. All right, dude. We spent a good chunk of the episode, maybe half the episode, on the LeakScope incident. Let's give some education to folks out there that I think people tune in for both. Okay, so this guy is from Australia, and I'll basically just get to the most important part. He says, I have been asked to coach our U13 regional rep team for the 2026 state titles. While I will be coaching them for 6 months, training is limited to 1 day a week for the team, as it will be on top of their own individual club training. Therefore, I want to make sure that when I select the squad, not only do I select the most talented players, but I want players that are going to enable me to implement the 3-4-3 possession-based system. He says he will have 2 90-minute sessions to select a squad of 16 from approximately 60 kids. And he says that 95% of them he's never seen play. Aside from the usual thing of getting them to play a game, I am hoping that you can suggest what you think are the best 3-4-3 training activities that I should use in order to choose the players that are going to allow me to install a possession-based style of play. It's tough, dude. That's tough.
It's extremely difficult. Extremely difficult. Let me tell you what comes to mind. Number one is, I think playing the games is the absolute best way to scout and select players. The best way. You cannot beat that, because that's the actual environment. That's what you get to see all the qualities, Benny. You get to see how fast the player is, how quick they are agility wise. You get to see how alert they are tactically. Do they understand the game, football? Are they scanning the field when they're not in possession? Are they aware of their surroundings when in possession? What does the quality of their touch look like? You know, when you get different passes, what does their defensive bite actually look like in a real environment? They're 1v1. What does their delay tactics, right? If they're being countered or something like this, like how are you handling it? Are you reacting in transition from offense to defense? You know, when your team loses it from defense to offense, like all of that stuff you can kind of get from a game. Hopefully this guy's filming the game, because that would also be a valuable tool, okay? Along those lines, and look, people are going to take issue with what I say next, but what else is new? After you see a lot of football, and Brian and I like to say this, you know, especially offline, you can tell after like 5 or 10 minutes of a match if a player's like got it. In 5 or 10 minutes, immediately. Okay, sure. I pick you. Then to fill out the rest of your team, the rest of your roster, then you have to kind of focus a little bit more, right? But the top end of the rosters, let's say 5, 6, 7, 8 players, it's like this. The top 5 players you can immediately identify. And then I would resort to not looking at them anymore. So if you have 2 9-minute games like this guy is suggesting, Benny, maybe within the first 45 minutes, or at least in the first game itself, you already can select your top 5 or 6 guys. Then for the rest of the time, don't look at those 5 or 6 guys anymore. You'll be tempted because you want to see good players, right? Don't look at them anymore. Look at the rest of the crop and see how it is that they receive, how they move, all the things that I described. Insofar as training activities, it's tough, man. It's tough because those top guys, the best at your trials, if you put them in a 4v1 rondo, for instance, they might be shocking because they've never done it in their lives. You know, they'll receive the wrong way with the wrong foot. You'll correct it, then they'll try to do the right thing, and it'll be shocking. Just really bad, Ben. And I've seen it. I have personal experience, right? We would recruit great players for our team. Imagine, our teams are good, so we only want to get the best to come in. And we would get them to come in, put them in a 4v1 rondo with the kids who have been doing it forever. They're fucking terrible. So, and the same for all the other 3-4-3 activities. It's going to be hard, in my opinion, to use those things to say, ah, that one you're in. That one, not so much. So I wish I could offer more. The one exception, perhaps, is the attacking players. Because you just do finishing drills. And then you can see how the players strike the ball and finish the ball and the composure on the ball. And that helps filter out who are the better goal scorers from not so much. I'm hoping you have more to contribute, Benny, because as far as I can tell, the 3-4-3 activities will not help you really filter in a session or two who are the best players for your squad.
Yeah, I think you were being a little bit generous, Gary, when you said 5 to 10 minutes, because I feel like you or Brian could see a player and you could immediately know in 30 seconds, bro. I think actually Pochettino said, like, I see a player for 20 seconds and I already know if he has it or not.
Ben, you know? the problem is, if I say that, which, okay, it's the truth.
That's what you were thinking, right?
But people, of course, but people will shut off because they won't believe that. You know what I'm saying? That now the rest of what I'm going to say is kind of invalidated because they're lingering on the first thing that I said, which is like within 2 minutes. Okay. I know. And actually it's not 2 minutes because it's how many touches you get. So it's kind of like with five touches, the player gets five touches. I know. Five touches.
No, but Gary, I kind of feel like the 4v1, for example, this guy's doing it with his team. One, you can easily tell if a player has or not, just based on, you know, their first touch, the weight of their passing. And listen, this guy has two sessions. So I would start both sessions with the 4v1, maybe 5 to 10 minutes of instruction. Yeah. Like, these are the concepts that are non-negotiable. You have to follow. And you see from day one to day two, which are the players that are grasping the concept and actually trying to execute it, right? Because think about it. If this guy is a 3-4-3 member and he's going to be using the program, that's what he's going to be starting every single session with, right? So I think if he doesn't do that, then when he gets into the actual team, then maybe there's guys that he's now can see like, oh shit, this guy's actually shocking. Because I think he said a U13 team. So the players are 12 years old. They should be able to understand the concept of receive the ball across your body, right? That's the most basic fundamental concept in the 4v1. And if they're just not doing it, or they simply can't grasp it up, okay, the first day, maybe you're a little bit more lenient and you have a little bit more grace. But if by the second day, they've already been doing it, I don't know, you do it 10 minutes both days, they've been doing it 20 minutes though, and they're still not understanding the concept, or you can tell that every time the ball comes to them, they lose the ball, that's when you know they're shocking. Because Gary, even if you put a player that has never been in a 4v1 rondo, if he has something, if he has quality, he's going to be keeping the ball. Obviously not every time, maybe he'll lose it a couple times, but more so than a shocking player, he's going to keep possession for his team. You know, that's whenever I have high school tryouts, like the new crop of players coming in, we always start with the 4v1, and you can easily tell, like, okay, this player is shocking when it comes to keeping possession for their team and even making the grid bigger, right? Like, obviously, as you get more advanced, you shrink the grid, but if you give them a lot of time and space on the ball and they're still making turnovers, or their passes are shocking, or the weight of their pass isn't very good, I think at that point, you know. But obviously, I think there is exceptions, right? Because I've seen it too, where a player is shocking in the rondo. Maybe they're like a center back or an outside back, and in the game, they're an absolute savage defensively. And, you know, maybe on the ball is not their strong suit, but so I think for sure, this is just me. I would start both of the sessions with rondos. And you brought up the point of the attacking players, maybe just a simple attacking pattern where you have everybody in their spots. You say, all right, winger, striker, center mids, like, line up here. I'm going to put you in your spots. Let's run through the most basic attacking pattern there is. And that way you can kind of see what their movement is off the ball. For the wingers, you can see the quality of their services. Center backs, you can see if they can ping a ball from right center back to left winger. Strikers, can you actually finish from a service? So that would be my session. I would go 10, 15 minutes of rondos, simple attacking pattern, and then let them play the rest of the time.
Got it. I like your answer a lot, Benny. I like it a lot. I suppose the main reason why I was more cautious with the activities is that I presume that since this is like a select team, right? That the disparity in the roster, the quality of every player in the roster there's not a huge gap, is what I'm saying. From the worst player to the, not the stars, right? But from the worst players to the mid type player, they're all kind of like the same. You know what I mean? Right. So if they're all kind of like the same, they're all kind of look the same maybe in the rondos. You know what I mean? So then for me, it's kind of like, okay, if they all kind of look the same in the rondos, or they all kind of look the same in the attacking patterns, then how do I pick them? And it's a challenge. I'm not saying I know the answer. It's a challenging problem. It's a hard problem, but I like your answer, Benny, because if the roster quality does have some good separation between players, right, then they'll get exposed and you'll be able to filter with your activities. I agree with you.
Yeah. And the other thing too, you can kind of like a test without even the players knowing, is you tell them, like, if you're in the middle, you better be working your ass off to go and win the ball. And the players that are kind of just going through the motions, okay, you know that this player is not gonna really be showing you effort in the game. But if you see a guy that's flying in the middle of the rondo and trying to end people's lives, then all right, like I'm gonna watch this kid in the 11v11s for sure, you know. Yeah, and the other thing I would do too, Gary, is I don't know, hopefully this guy has like a piece of tape and has all their names on it, but get their names out on the first day. And then on the second day, you try and put the guys that you think are the best after day one and put those guys together in the rondo. Because if there's a really good player and he's paired with four other shocking guys, it can also make that player look bad. You know, so group,
hey, if you very good.
Yeah, you see a guy that's top notch, or all right, let's get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. These guys shined yesterday. Let's put them all together.
Very, not, dude, very then, good advice. Very good advice, Benny.
You might miss a player that's grouped with the worst group and he makes a pass, but it's a turnover every time because his teammates aren't shifting or whatever it is. So
yeah. Very good advice. Very good advice, Benny. Absolutely. And yeah. So day two is you do that. Correct. Good stuff, man.
100%. I'll be, hopefully this guy does record it and, you know, he can share with us his progress. To me, it was cool to see that he's from Australia, bro. Like the fact that this is reaching people all across the world. It's badass.
For sure. I think we need more people from England learning from us.
Yeah.
Now, I'm triggering because you know how the English are. The English think that they fucking know the shit. You know, we're not going to listen to no Americans.
Yeah. No, hey, but if there's a kid at the trial and he spits, sign him immediately, bro.
Oh, immediately. Immediately.
I was
that's gonna be the teaser for opening the episode. If there's a kid that spits during a tryout, you sign him up.
100%. I'm trying to recall because I think by the time Brian went to Chivas Academy and Galaxy, like his team was kind of already established and it was more so just adding on players as they go. But was there ever a day of like tryouts, like open tryouts for people to come? And if there was, how did it look like?
Yeah, I don't think I ever, well, that's not true. I did go to tryouts, but yes, there were tryouts and yes, he did select players from tryouts. Absolutely, Benny, especially during the Chivas days. Absolutely. And I think it was predominantly, look, this is a question for him because my memory is kind of shocking. Predominantly attacking players, and truth be told, I think a lot of it had to do with athleticism. I'm being sincere here because the two guys in particular that I'm remembering during the tryouts, they were just animals and would just like blow by everybody and go and score goals. And we were talking about, I think we were talking about U14 at that point. And look, it's not like they were only athletic. They had technical competencies. They were Hispanic, right? Mexican American. They had a soccer brain, yes. But they also had that outlier athleticism. And then it's like, okay, we've got something to work with. Like, right. And this player is going to be super dangerous for us and it's going to help us. So that's one thing that I definitely remember. I do not see, this is where folks, unfortunately, have a misunderstanding with me and what we stand for. Many folks think that we represent, only the technical and the tactical and the athletes, fuck the athletes. It's not about the athletes at all or athleticism. And maybe it's because they have a kid who's not as athletic as the man child, right? And so they latch onto us and 343 because they think that we're all about the non-athletic kid. Absolutely not. You need athleticism, my friend. It's just that we don't value the athleticism as much as all our American mainstream counterparts. Like, for them, it's all about athleticism for the most part. Hey, if you can kick a ball, okay, cool, fine, but give me the athlete. For us, it's like you need the whole package.
Yeah, I think Gary, people misconstrue, like, for example, your post about like, oh, if Busquets was a player in the U.S., then he would never get selected, right? Mm-hmm. And people take that and say like, oh, Gary doesn't want athletes. You know, he'd rather have a technical and a tactical player. But dude, if a player has the whole package where they're technical, tactical, and they're an athlete, 1,000% you're signing that kid. Dude.
Yeah, it's like, let's imagine that scale from 0 to 10. To be a professional soccer player, let's say that you need to have a base athleticism of a 6, let's say. That like that's the minimum. You need at least a 6, okay? Sergio Busquets, maybe a 6. You know, Roman Riquelme, a 6. Xavi Hernandez, a 6. You know, all these guys are 6s. Pirlo is a 6 on the athletics scale from 0 to 10, okay? Where 10 is like Usain Bolt or something if we're talking just about directional speed. Okay, I still look for and need a 6. If the player is a 5 or a 4, well, I'm sorry, kid. Like, even if you're an 8 or a 9 on the technical tactical, you are literally, relatively speaking, handicapped, because you aren't going to be able to express your technical or your tactical if you're a 4 on the athleticism scale. So you need at least a 6. My American colleagues, though, and counterparts in the mainstream, the MLS demographic, however, they look at a 6 and they're like, no, no thanks, no chance. You know what I'm saying? Even if that 6 has an 8 and 9s and 10s on the other things, they'll say, no, he's a 6, he's out. Right. You feel me? Like they need an 8 on the athleticism scale, and they will compromise the technical and the tactical. They make, if they're a 6 technical and a 6 tactical, but an 8 athletic, that's their selection. But for me, it's the reverse, right? If they're a 6 or a 7 physical and an 8 or 9 technical tactical, I pick that guy over the athletic guy. So I pick, you know, Tony Cruz over Weston McKinney every day of the week. But if those two fools were here in the United States with their exact qualities with everything, 9 times out of 10, Weston McKinney is getting selected and elevated in Major League Soccer and the whole ecosystem here. That's the distinction. But you still have to be at least Tony Cruz level. Athletic.
Yeah, and just so people don't get it misinterpreted, Tony Cruz is still athletic, bro. He's just not.
Well, of course. He's
fucking Weston McKennie athletic, dude.
Of course. So if they both go in for a 50-50 or a header or things of that nature, Weston McKennie's going to win those duels or second balls, you know, try to win the second ball. Weston McKennie's going to win those things over Luka Modric also, the second balls and the headers and the shoulder to shoulder and all that stuff. Weston McKennie every day of the week.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, one more thing to add on this tryout thing. I think if I was this guy, I'd have, I don't know if he has access to 80 balls, but every player on a ball, and just start with fucking juggling, dude, and make it a little competition. Like, all right, if you drop the ball, you're out. And then the last five guys or the last 6 guys, you group them together in the roundup. You know, obviously, does juggling correlate to how good you are of a player? No, but it's still going to tell you, like, does this kid have some technical ability? You know what I mean? Make it a competition. Yeah, first filter, for sure. But again,
so many things, Benny, yeah. I should recruit you for techniques and tactics for tryouts and trials. And we can generate a whole like plan of action or suggestions, you know, or different session plans to maybe divulge. Because I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense, dude.
Yeah. Nah, dude, everything that I've gotten has been from my experiences with Brian. Being on his team, watching him train my brother's team, watching him run stuff like that. So, man, I think, I don't know. I'm excited to see what this guy says to our answers. Hopefully he implements it.
But you see, the I think one of the reasons that you're offering him much better advice than I am is because, look, I'm being sincere. Don't take this the wrong way. It's kind of like when we had tryouts or trials, we're just watching them receive a ball and kick a ball. And we're like, okay, that we got it. You know, I don't need some complex, convoluted, like, plan to try to filter the players and shake them all out and see who are the better ones and who are the ones who aren't going to make it. It's kind of like I sit there in my lawn chair, I watch them play. I'm like, yep. Okay, let's take another day to kind of really make a decisions on the rest of the roster, you know, because they're all kind of like the same. And that's it. It's kind of like, you know how people here like to say the eye test. And many of them kind of mockingly say the eye test because they don't really believe in it. You know, they think it's because it's not objective. You know, what are the metrics, Gary, and all that stuff. They can't verify it, but it's real. The eye test is real, ladies and gentlemen. Absolutely.
Yeah, but Gary, this is the problem with tryouts in the U.S. because a lot of coaches or practitioners, they think that they have the eye, but really they don't, bro. Really, they don't. And so what does their tryouts look like? Players show up, split them up on teams. There's 100 kids on the field at the same time. And all right, let's select the guy that scored the most goals or the center back that did the best headers, bro. They're not deeply looking. And again, with the athleticism versus tactical, they're going to pick the most athletic guys, obviously. They're not looking at the intricate details of how a player receives across his body or his first touch or the way that he strikes a ball, his movement off the ball. They're looking at the surface level type things, or it's the obvious ones, you know? Yeah.
You know what's I think this gentleman has a good situation too, in that it's U13s, because in my opinion, it gets harder the higher the age groups go and the higher the level goes. It gets much, much more difficult to identify who's who and much more difficult for anybody kind of giving suggestions or advice, because who are the best players depends on how you want to play, which this gentleman nailed it. He gave me the context. He's like, hey, I want to play the possession based way. You know, I've been a member of you guys for X. So I get it. But in the world, every coach has their own philosophy, their own views of things. So what's the best center mid for me is not the best center mid for that guy. And we'll both be watching the same trial and he'll pick the other guy and I'll pick this guy and Brian will pick a different guy and you'll pick a different guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, true. All right, Gary, really quick, because I know we're coming to the hour mark, but let's just address two comments really quick. If maybe we won't get to the second one. Via Family 805 asks you, what would you suggest if you have 2 to 3 players in a team that are way above their current local club level, that's currently the best team in the city? Should they stay at that club and not develop, or should they move on to one of the non-MLS next clubs, or the non-MLS but MLS next clubs that you mentioned as not real academies, but we know are way better than your current local team? The cost is the same, but we might get a little scholarship because the MLS next team wants my kid on the team, but we have to travel about 45 minutes to practice.
How old do they say?
He doesn't say.
Okay. So, MLS next we know is at least U13, right?
Right.
Okay. So at least U13. Because my general advice has always been, hey, at the younger age groups, who cares, right? Don't drive 45 minutes or whatever. If you're 10, 11 years of age or something like that, you chill with your best coach, the best coach you can find. Now, if these kids in their current environment are not with an exceptional coach, then it's already a no-brainer. You go to the non-MLS, MLS next team that has a way better roster and competes in a better competition. It's a no-brainer. And it's also kind of a no-brainer if you're already like U14, because look, you at this age, you kind of have to start getting platformed. And unfortunately, because of the monopoly, if you're in a local team and you're not competing in the best leagues, you're basically invisible, unfortunately. So you're going to have to make that move. And pros and cons to weigh without context, I don't know. But if these are the best 3 kids on your team, they're probably having a great time because they're the best kids. And they're scoring a lot of goals and they're playing all the minutes and they're doing all this sort of stuff. So it's the love affair with the game is getting better and better and better and being reinforced, I presume, right? Because that is generally how it works. If they go to the MLS next team, I have no idea. Are they going to be the best kids? Are they going to be the middle of the pack? or are they going to be kind of one of the stragglers, you know, at the tail end of the pack, in which case you aren't the star and you might not be playing all the time either. So what does that do to the psychology of the players, right? Are they going to love the game as much? And ultimately, Benny, look, if you're not that great and you're not playing that much, like, then what does it end up mattering at the end of the day anyway?
Well, I don't know, Gary. They might play a lot because now they're mandatory required to play a 30-minute period.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ.
No, but Gary, what about his? So his statement says, should they stay at the club and not develop? Okay, so let's assume that these kids' teammates are shocking, but the coach is exceptional. Can those players still develop in that environment? Or does the quality of your players, would that make you not develop?
I think you can absolutely develop. You have an exceptional coach that's mentoring you. And the younger, the better, I'm presuming. Again, I'm thinking like U13-ish, already that borderline, or U12, something like that. You have an exceptional coach mentoring you. You're having a good time. You're having fun. You're presumably dribbling in actual match days. So you're honing your dribbling skills. I mean, it's kind of like the same argument of academy players not being allowed to play high school versus being allowed to play high school. If you play high school, you get to acquire leadership skills as well, right? Fortify that area of your game, that sort of mentality thing. You get to practice, I don't know, kind of being the man, I don't know, versus being the bitch. But now I'm having a second thought about this person's comment, because it sounds like they're framing it in such a way that they're taking a shot at our episode. I don't remember what that episode was about, but it's kind of like, should they stay on this team and not develop? Okay, so if you already know that they're not developing, why ask me the question? It's been asked and answered. Should they stay at the team and not develop? Why? That's not a question. That's a statement. So if that's true, if that's what you believe, get the fuck out of here. Go to your MLS next, and I bid you good luck.
Yeah. No, I don't think that was his intention to take a shot. I think it was a sincere question, but I think you're right. I mean, it seems like his answer is already made up. I think he just wants to hear you say it or hear me say it.
Yeah, but, man. If you already know that they're not developing, then what are we even talking about here?
Yeah.
Go.
But maybe, Gary, maybe he doesn't have the eye for a coach, and maybe these kids actually are developing and he just doesn't know it. Because a lot of parents will look at the score line and did my team win this weekend for development, right? But maybe the coach is actually developing the kids, but since his teammates are shocking, they're not winning as many games. And now the parent thinks, oh, we're losing every weekend and we're not developing.
I see that. But they don't say anything about whether their team is winning or losing.
No, they don't. He just says, okay. My kid averages a hat trick per game. So maybe they are winning.
Cool, man. All cool. Right. Yeah. So
I think he was sincere. I don't think he was taking a shot.
Let's be charitable. Go to the MLS next team that's 45 minutes away. It's a big sacrifice. You will learn a lot as a parent, I'm sure. The kid will also have a new experience and learn a lot. If nothing else, the experience in and of itself. And then you get to measure yourself against, you know, better competition and better players, and you'll be able to better assess whether your kid is truly has potential for this or not. Because if he's scoring a hat trick now and he goes over there and he's scoring a hat trick over there as well, okay, this is kind of interesting, right? But if he goes over there and whole season goes by and he scored only 3 goals, then that also says something.
Yeah. All right, Gary, last one. I waited till the end to trigger you today.
Oh, boy. I've been triggered the whole episode, man.
Now you're really going to get triggered. GT Johns 220. This guy has been fairly outspoken on our comments, like 5 per video. Pro Rel is overrated. That only works in countries with deeper soccer cultures. There is not that kind of money for soccer in the U.S. Most countries are operating a Pro Rel system. In reality, the same clubs go up and the same clubs go down. Let them have
Let's take it one step at a time, because there's 3 things there that have to be addressed. Okay. Number one, He read the first sentence, the first statement again, the first assertion.
ProRel is overrated.
Okay, stop there. He doesn't know what ProRel is, and if he does, then he's absolutely an imbecile. I'll tell you why. Anybody who actually knows what ProRel is knows it is a manifestation, an incarnation, an instantiation of the following values: freedom, opportunity, and merit. Wherever, and this is a recommendation for the entire audience, wherever you see ProRel mentioned in any context, positive or negative, I want you to replace ProRel, eliminate that ProRel, and substitute in freedom, opportunity, and merit. So let's read his thing again. It's freedom, opportunity, and merit are overrated. What the fuck are you saying? You're fucking retarded. You are fucking retarded. Okay, so if it's overrated, what is your suggestion, my friend? What is your suggestion? The opposite of freedom, the opposite of opportunity, the opposite of a meritocracy is what you're vouching for. Next statement, Benny. What's his second thing?
It only works in countries with deeper soccer cultures. There's not fucking that kind of money.
Stop. Fucking retarded. First off, we have a super deep soccer culture. It's just that MLS does not capture it, and so you don't see it. We have more soccer first households and heritage in here and history here among that demographic than almost every other country in the world. Why do you think the World Cup comes over here and sets records? Why do you think they wanted to have the Club World Cup over here? Why do you think they want to have all the Mexican competitions over here? Mexican national team over here. Leagues Cup, which is between Mexico and MLS. No, zero games are played in Mexico. Zero. They're all played here in the United States. Why do you think that? Like, use your brain a little bit. Like, we actually have more of a soccer culture and more economics and more money, more infrastructure than Mexico itself, which people say is a soccer crazed place. No, it's hosted here. We have it all here, Benny. We have a deep soccer culture, but it's not allowed to flourish. It is not allowed to flourish. Our soccer culture is being suppressed. The demographics that bleed it here are not allowed to materialize, Benny. You're not allowed to compete. You're not. Show a little bit too much passion. You're not docile enough, you know, for the Pacific Northwest. You know, you have to be of a certain type of person, you know, and a certain type of demeanor. And if you aren't, you need to assimilate to the Pacific Northwest sort of way of living and be soft-spoken and be all polite and neat and be diplomatic and don't show any, you know what I mean? Like, that is the fucking culture that is elevated here. That's why this gentleman, if he's being sincere, and that's actually his mental model worldview, that's why he thinks that we don't have a soccer culture. Next.
There is not that kind of money for soccer in the U.S.
Bitch, it's the most money ever. It's the most money ever. We have the most money ever. Ever. Bro, we invest more. There's so much money for soccer here. It's outrageous. Coaches come here. Like, remember past decades, oh, he's getting the coaching gigs because he has an English accent, right? You know, and all the foreigners that come here and coach like youth soccer, for example. And then we can talk about pro. I actually already talked about pro. Because there's so much fucking money for soccer here that youth coaches make a living off it. Go anywhere in the world, Ben. Youth soccer coaches aren't making a living. And the ones that are making a living are a ridiculously tiny fraction and they barely get by. Here, hey, you're not wealthy at all, but you can make 40K, 50K, 60K, 80K, 120K are the exceptions. Coaching youth soccer, so much money, so much money. MLS fills stadiums up for the shittiest soccer product on earth. And the stadiums to get full because people are like, oh, yeah, we're going to go. We got so much money for soccer. We're just going to go and watch the soccer game. Benny, it's the stupidest comment ever. We have the deepest soccer pockets in the world.
All right. Benny,
La Liga, Benny,
where I told you, you know, told you.
Benny, La Liga, right? What was it? Villarreal and Barcelona were going to come play, you know, they got a sanction that you're going to come play a league match, a La Liga match in the United States. I don't know if it's Miami or where it's supposed to be. And so many European teams, clubs want to play at least a league match in the United States. Why? Because it's going to get packed. We have so much money, so many people dying for football here.
Yep. I would go to that game, dude, honestly. All right. His last one kind of doesn't really make sense. Most countries are operating a pro rel system in reality. And then a new sentence. I think he meant to just make it one sentence. Most countries are operating a pro rel system in reality. The same clubs go up and the same clubs go down.
Okay, so what? I get, first off, do a full analysis and that's not really true. Okay, that's not really true. It's not like the ones that got promoted, the very next year they get relegated immediately. It happens. It happens frequently. It doesn't happen all the time. Many times there's a lot of staying power. And even if that were the case, who cares? It doesn't fucking matter. The whole point is that you belong to a club as a supporter. It's an actual club. And the excellence on the field, the sporting side, isn't the only thing that matters. There's so much more that matters when you are part of an actual club. And so if you're a third division club or a second division club or whatever, it doesn't matter that you're not in the top tier. You love the club because you're an actual part of it. So if you get promoted to the Premier League or you get promoted to La Liga, or you get promoted to Bundesliga 1 or whatever, and then the next year you go back down, it doesn't matter. For that 1 year, you got to see the top flight and you got to compete against the top flight. And you already knew as a supporter, fuck, every match is going to be so hard. You know what I'm saying? So even if they only won 4 or 5 or 6 matches out of 32, that meant so much to them. The intensity of emotion for that group, Benny, is so much higher than anything any of the American MLS people have ever experienced. Ever experienced. When the LA Galaxy last year won MLS Cup, yeah, the LA Galaxy fans or supporters, I'm sure, were happy and they felt good and they were able to talk some shit online and stuff, like any sport here, NFL, NBA. But the team that got promoted to the Premier League last year and then immediately went down, every single one of their victories, league victories, their emotional state was way higher than an LA Galaxy supporter when the LA Galaxy won the cup. Way higher. And every single game that they drew got 1 point, emotions off the charts. You know what I'm saying? And every single game that they ended up losing, but it was tight, it was close, and you didn't know what was going to happen, and maybe we might draw this game, get a point with the last corner kick. Emotions way higher than anything any LA Galaxy supporter has ever experienced. That's what matters, my boy. It doesn't matter if you get relegated the next year. Get it through your head. It doesn't matter that you will never win the Bundesliga. It's always going to be Bayern Munich. Or you won't win the French League because it's going to be PSG. That doesn't fucking matter. You were right, Benny. This was more triggering than everything else.
I told you. Hey, Wrexham need to fucking get promoted to the Premier League, bro. That will open the eyes of so many Americans, bro. I encourage that guy. I don't know if you've seen the show, Jay. Welcome to Wrexham.
I haven't.
Badass show. You just see how much it means to the people of the town. Every game, every win. I mean, Gary, every game is like a final. That's how intense it feels. That's how the pressure is. And dude, it'd be badass if they go to the Premier League. It's going to be tough this year, bro. And think about it, bro. I think they started in like the fourth division, and now they're all the way up to the Championship, bro. It's insane.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, fucking Leicester City. This guy says everybody gets promoted and relegated. Leicester won Premier League in 2016, and now they got relegated. Now they're in the Championship, bro.
So, yeah.
It's crazy,
and
bro.
Nothing's guaranteed either. Manchester United during the Ferguson years and stuff, they're like, oh, it's always going to be Manchester United there winning. Maybe Chelsea will give them a battle or something. It's the same thing that they say about PSG now or Man City the past, you know, eight years since Pep kind of arrived and started getting a streak of titles. Manchester United now is in a dumpster fire, right? They're mid-table. It's a mid-table team. But back then, it's like you would never see the collapse of Manchester United or the collapse of Chelsea or the collapse of Arsenal. You know, it happens. You are forced to be at your very best in a pro rel league. It doesn't matter if you're at the top of the table. Your head could be chopped off at any moment if you do things wrong.
Yeah. Hey, Gary, there's a guy on Instagram and his whole page is like, I'm growing my hair out until Man United wins 5 games in a row. This was hair is like one of those fucking London guards. Fucking huge, bro.
Yeah.
So he gets pissed every time they lose, or it's fucking hilarious, dude.
Hey, man.
I told you, bro, you're going to get the most triggered at the comment. We'll see if this guy comments back or if he just shuts his mouth now that, because that's sort of like, even when I made that audiogram about you responding to the guy about training compensation and solidarity payments, just complete crickets. Like, I think he was maybe like, all right, maybe Gary's right. But you know what? It's so hard for humans to admit that they were wrong and somebody else is right.
It's insane, man. It's insane that folks who don't even work in a particular space think that they're experts in a space. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. It's like I would never go, let's say Mourinho had a podcast, or, you know, Pep Guardiola, you know, has a coach's corner every week and starts talking about football. I've been in football my entire life, and I would not dare go on their YouTube comment area or Instagram comment area and fucking say, oh, fucking Mourinho, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about, you know, blah, 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 for X, Y, and Z reasons. And on what planet would I do that? And yes, I am comparing myself to Mourinho, relatively speaking, compared to you. Me compared to Mourinho is you compared to me. Let's just be real. It's just weird what compels people to fucking say, oh, the fucking physicists don't know shit about black holes. Let me tell you how Einstein was wrong. And I have the theory that resolves, you know, the universe's mysteries. That shit happens all the time. Oh, the earth is flat and I can prove it. The fuck is going on, Benny? Humans are weird, weird creatures.
I think it was Mike Silzer who told me this. And people obviously don't know who that is, but one of my former coaches. And he says that like soccer is the only profession where like a parent will walk up to you and tell you that they know more. Like, for example, he's like in his team meetings, he's like, oh, like, tell me your job. And some guy's like, oh, I'm a police officer. He's like, all right, I'm never going to come up to you and on your shift and tell you how to arrest this guy, you know. But in soccer and sports, people are so comfortable to just come up to you and tell you how to be doing your job. That's funny.
And that's cool. I accept it. That's what sports is, right? That's the entertainment side of sports, right? People need to be entertained, and then they comment on the entertainment and they feel all a part of it, and criticism is part of it. I accept all of it. I accept all of it. I also find it fascinating and interesting what we just finished talking about. It's interesting because they actually believe that they know or know more. I find it interesting. Keep doing it. Keep giving us those comments. Keep being toxic. It's great. Look what it stimulates out of us. Makes for good content, I believe. But it's really weird, man. It's really weird. You know what it tells me too, Ben? Sorry to keep going. It tells me that a particular person has not achieved expertise in anything in their life, anything. Because I think, and it's not my original thought, I've seen this from people way smarter than me that I've learned a lot from. When you achieve a level of expertise in something, a whole part of another world reveals itself to you. The part of the world that you realize that nobody knows anything, number one. You realize that the media is completely agenda-driven and knows fuck all about the thing that they're reporting on, and even lie, cheat, and steal. But you don't get to see that sort of stuff, right? Unless you achieve some sort of expertise in a particular craft. You get what I'm saying? Like if you're a really good grocery bagger at Ralph's and become an expert in that, you still don't see it though, because nobody's reporting on grocery bagging. However, they might start talking about automation. I'm going off the cuff here. automation and grocery bagging and how that's going to save a lot of money because we won't need grocery baggers anymore. And the grocery expert grocery baggers like, oh yeah, okay, give that a go with the self-checkout places and see how long people take to bag their own groceries. And that holds up the machines and that's going to create a line there. And now people are getting upset because you're waiting because grandma over there can't, you know, package for pineapples and apples and bananas and seven is taking 30 minutes at the self-checkout. So there's all these other repercussions that the grocery bagger probably knew would happen. And somebody who's not a grocery bagger doesn't know. So apologies to everybody listening to my grocery bagging rant there. But this is what happens when Benny ups my heart rate.
It's me triggering you and your Celsius, bro. Get you
Celsius
going.
Has something. Dude, hey, Celsius, somebody who works. Come on, throw me a sponsorship over here. But you have to be okay with me saying the things that I say. Otherwise, it's a no deal.
They will never hire you as a brand ambassador because you say retarded.
Why not, man? I see retarded and I'm cool with Suarez having spit on somebody.
Yes. Oh, man. I can't wait to read the comments on this episode. It'll be a fun one for sure. All right, brother. Good stuff.
Okay. Thank you, Benny. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.